Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight I want to welcome Jeff Harmon. Jeff has been an astrologer for over three decades, utilizing a variety of systems, including classical Western astrology, Vedic, Kabbalistic, and astrolocation. He's also a spiritual counselor, and he has had international celebrity and business clientele. Jeff, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come on. We've got some fun stuff to talk about. I've always been fascinated with astrology and how accurate it can actually be. But I'm not really familiar with how it all works and how it connects with the planets and even the spiritual realm. But before we get into any of that, I'd love to get more details about your background and what got you started with this.
Well, that's a story I tell a lot. It actually started back in the mid-70s. I'm dating myself here. But I was driving, and my mother would absolutely peg girlfriends for me. She would constantly say, Jeffrey, you know, that girlfriend is this way and that way and what have you. And I'd go, come on. I said, you know, how do you know this? And she, I said, this isn't mother's intuition. It's too accurate. And she would say, well, I got her chart, or, you know, I cast a chart. And I'm going, come on, what do you mean you cast a chart? You got her chart. So she said, it's astrology. And I said, that stuff doesn't work. I said, the planets are too far away. All the stuff that all the scientists hand us all, right? It's all bunk, right? It's all smoke and mirrors. And she said, well, before you debunk it, why don't you give it a shot? Check it out and, you know, see what you think. And I did. And the more I did, the more I went, wow, there's really something to it. And my mother was really smart. She started out as an LPN, then she was an RN, then she ended up being, I think, a nurse practitioner by the time she was done. If she wasn't a nurse practitioner, she was very close to it. And ironically, she died of cancer, but in 1988. But I had the greatest time with her from the, I'd say, mid to late 70s, poking around. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was getting familiar with it. I was learning the basics. And then what happened is in the 80s, that's when I really started picking it up. That's when I started having a lot of teachers. I started exploring different avenues. And particularly, I fell into the ancient stuff. When I say ancient, I mean stuff that's pre-1600 or 1700, because this is when astrology really fell apart. The Age of Reason or the Industrial Revolution really kind of quashed it when everything started moving over to the U.S. and, you know, all that. A lot of this went underground. Of course, we hear about the Masons and many secret societies, and that's pretty much where it went. And then in the 1800s, the spiritualist movement came back. You had Blavatsky and Ledbetter and Secret Order of the Golden Dawn. All these different things started coming out. And of course, Aleister Crowley is one of the more favorite ones, but who I don't like too much anyways, I might add. But, you know, he certainly contributed a lot. But what happened was I started going backwards. And then I found through many of the translators that were coming out with documents that most of the great stuff was actually prior to the 12th century and even farther back. In fact, the closer you get to Egypt, Chaldea, and ancient Greece, the better it gets. And this isn't a theory, it's actually a fact. And then, lo and behold, I start stumbling into Vedic astrology. This was probably the late 80s, something like that. And that's when I went, whoa, 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 this is really a whole nother world. And then I started studying everything I could get my hands on. I had many different teachers, some of which were great, some of which weren't. And then it's like anybody studying astrology or anything. You're going to first be enamored with it, and you're going to study everything you can, and then it has to start really making sense for you. And more importantly, it has to really give you a result. And that's what happened. Once I started really seeing the results, I owned a studio from about 1979 all the way up until the early 90s, a recording studio. We did films, industrial films, and I also did a lot of things in the forensics world too, acoustics, acoustic design, record albums, all this kind of stuff. And it was so fun because I had 2 feet in both ponds. I had 1 foot in each pond is a better way to say it, where I would have this linear world. And then I would have this other world going on where I'm like looking at everything from an astrological and spiritual perspective. And it was really fascinating. It was quite a journey and still has been. And then in the 90s, to bring you up to speed, was when it really, really started kicking in for me. And of course, the Vedic astrology really paralleled that. If anyone studies their Vedic astrology chart, you have what we call time periods. They're known as doshas. It's a strange word, but it really means time periods, and everyone has them. And that's what really blew my hair back. I had an old astrologer who's not around anymore. He was from India, and multi-generation astrologer. And he kind of took me under his wing, and he said, Jeff, he says, you're a Yavana. I said, well, what the heck is that? He says, a Yavana is a foreign-born non-Hindu astrologer. It's just like in Kabbalistic stuff. So he says, they're never going to teach you the secrets because you're not of the cloth. You know, you're not of the lineage. He says, but I will. He says, because I got your chart. And he says, I like you. And he started showing me stuff out, just like, where in the hell did you get this? And he's like, tradition. He said, this is the ancient Nadi astrology. And just here, I'll put this up on the screen so you can see Nadi astrology. See, a lot of people have heard of Vedic astrology. Vedic astrology is kind of the pop term here. I'll get to the right here. Here you can see on the screen. Vedic astrology is really kind of a phrase coined in the 60s. Its real name was called Jyotisha, and Jyotisha means the science of the light of the soul. And the principle behind this is that the soul force energy and karma leaves death to rebirth. And of course, as we progress through life, these karmas release both for good and for ill, as well as the karmas we're creating. And then, of course, from death, we take them with us, including the merits, the good and the bad, and the ugly. So what happens is the whole philosophy behind it, there's an ancient one called Nadi. I don't know if you've ever heard of Nadi, but Nadi is, many people have heard of the Nadi palm leaves and various different modalities. And it's a whole nother world. It's like you're looking literally at the light of the soul. Because when I do readings, people are often surprised. Well, how did you know my mom was that way, or my dad was that way, or the house was that way? Or because it's in the chart. It's in the chart. It was in my chart. And I think that's what really kind of really sold me. Because again, going back to my mother to round the story out, I really felt that, you know, how could astrology have any effect on Earth? But oh my God, does it ever? And belief is not required. In fact, you might find this kind of odd for me to say, but I don't know that I believe in astrology or anything. I'm more of a student observer. And the more I get to know, the more I know I don't know. And the more I step back and go, okay, let's just look this all over and see where it goes. And it's fascinating. It really is. It's a great journey. So that's my story.
I think that's a really cool way to look at things, actually. You know, you get a better outlook of everything. Now, how far back, let's just say Vedic astrology, how far back do you think this actually goes?
There's a lot of theories on that, and it's a great question, because depending on who you speak to, there are many scholars, PhDs, who say that it's not that old. There's many others that say it is. I believe it's thousands of years old. In fact, Nadi and Jyotisha, actually, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of documents in the Madras Library in India. Nobody knows how to translate them. Nobody. The dialect is so old, they don't know if it's some form of ancient Tamil. It's certainly not Sanskrit. It's a derivative of it, but they don't know how. And we find the same thing in Hebrew, in Aramaic. Well, Hebrew especially, if you go way back, when you lose the cantillation marks and you lose the vowels and all that, it's really subject to numerology and interpretation. It's a cryptic language, both Hebrew and Sanskrit. So it goes clearly back thousands of years. In fact, that's another interesting topic is, there's debate, you know, did this stuff, well, first off, I'll say this, there is, in my opinion, there is absolutely no way that anyone observed this stuff. They could not have, through deductive reasoning, said, oh, okay, you know, we know the planets are here and there and all that. Because when you look into Jyotish astrology, they not only knew that our solar system our Earth went around the sun. But let me show you a diagram. Many people have heard of this. This is called the precession of the equinoxes. It'll come into focus there. The precession of the equinoxes is well known. And that is our solar system is catapulting around a central sun. And this may very well be a binary system. I personally believe it is. And it's not this perfect little circle like I've got on the screen. Some say it's an elliptical orbit. And there's theories that it's somewhere between 25,800 years to 26,000 6,000 years. I think it's 25,800 and something. No one knows for sure. But it's known as the precession of the equinoxes. And of course, the tropical zodiac is actually the fixed zodiac, and the sidereal zodiac is really what it's kind of referred to, is what we go around. So the Vedas not only knew that, but they also knew that this, we had a 250 million year galactic cycle. Excuse me. Plain English, you can't get that from sitting on camels on top of mountains observing stars. Not going to happen. So, you know, the ancient documents actually refer to some of the Jyotishas, and that's, you know, Jyotisha was a person who practiced Vedic astrology. And they actually said they were rishis. Now, in Sanskrit and Hindi, rishi means seer. This is the same exact thing we find in the Kabbalistic documents. And what's interesting is Rome, in somewhere between the 3rd and the 5th century, it was often referred to as the Nicene Councils. You probably heard of them, right? Those fine bearded men who were murdering each other to decide what Christians would believe for the next, you know, 1,500 years.
Right.
Yeah, and they were. They were slaughtering each other, doing horrible stuff, and indoctrinating all kinds of stuff, and burying knowledge. There's overwhelming evidence to that. And this was knowledge, not just people abusing altar boys. But the point was, is that there was never a erasing of the doctrine of reincarnation. That was something that was indoctrinated into the church much later, but we find in the Vedic or the Jyotish stuff, as well as in the Kabbalistic stuff, clearly reincarnation was absolutely implied. In fact, one of my favorite documents to refer to, and this is actually not a document that old, is called the Sha'arei HaGilgum, which Sha'ar in Hebrew actually means gate, and HaGilgum is a word that means cycling or reincarnations. And in this, they talk specifically, see, you'll see that's another text right there I just went by a second ago. That's actually called the Nefesh HaSitzim, right here, this book. And Nefesh is a Hebrew word for the lower portion of the conscious mind or very bottom end of the soul. And what's really interesting is they talked, and now this is, again, a very well-known document, a rabbinical text that specifically says we are here reincarnating and purifying and rectifying the soul. In fact, you can see Nefesh here relates to what we would call the lower conscious self or the minds we kind of think with all the time. Rosh is the spirit. Neshama is the lower portion of the upper soul. And the Chaya is also known as the wisdom portion of the soul and the upper position of the soul. And by the way, you'll notice this, if anybody's familiar, this is the tree of life. If I take the mystery out of these words, you know what Malchus means? Earth. You know what Yesod means? That's the moon. This is Venus. That is Mercury. That's the Sun. That's Jupiter. That's Mars. Guess what this is? The escape from Alcatraz planet, Saturn. And anyone who's been around UFOs or any of the new disclosure stuff that's going on, there's all kinds of weird phenomena going on with Saturn. We see particles going in and out of it. They don't know if it's ships, what have you, the rings and all that. Not that there isn't rings on other planets, but Saturn seems to be the escape hatch for the soul in these models. Now, people say, well, that's all, you know, Jewish rabbinical stuff. Well, not really, because guess what? If you go back into things called the Upanishads, which many people have heard of, there's many Upanishads. These are like scriptural texts from ancient India. And they call some of them the minor and major Upanishads. Well, one in particular is the Tatryaka, which is a very, I have all these Upanishads, and they're very obscure when you read them. So you can't just pick them up and just go, oh, here it is. But if you read between the lines and the references, they actually specifically speak the same exact thing. The five parts of the aura or souls, they're layers of the soul. You have the physical body, then you have what they might call the etheric double. They don't call it that, but it's like that. You have what they call the psychic double, the noetic double, and it keeps on going out. And it's the same thing that we see in the Sha'arei HaGilgum. So this is really interesting stuff. So, you know, getting back to astrology, it's like, what the heck is astrology? Well, notice Saturn seems to be the escape hatch. In fact, in Vedic astrology, here, I'll put up a guy that we all might know right now. This is Donald Trump's birth chart in Vedic astrology. And for anybody watching, this is actually a Northern Indian chart. Just so you know, Southern Indian charts look like that. They're both the same. They're just read differently. And India is such an ancient place, and also the techniques are very diverse there. And I've studied with a lot of different Vedic astrologers, certainly haven't studied with all of them, but I'm surprised at how diverse it is, depending, there's many different methods to Vedic astrology. So I use the Northern chart for readings and people, but it's a profound science. And again, going back to, you know, what we were talking about, the whole element of astrology is a divine science. These planets are not operating on gravity. They're operating as what I would call an interactive consciousness on the soul. And it's completely different for you, for me, for everyone else out there. And that's what always blew my mind. And I have to say, I have a lot of psychiatrists and psychologists who I do readings with, and we do research. And it's a fascinating tool to look at that. You know, it really is.
Yeah, what I find fascinating is, I don't want to say predictions, but the way you can decode the future basically through astrology. Yeah. I mean, I've seen people do it. It's mind-blowing the accuracy you can get. Now, how is that? Can you explain a little bit about how that works?
Well, there's a lot of different types of astrology. So you and this is what's fascinating and what really enamored me when I first started getting into astrology is, most people are familiar with their birth chart. So like here's a good example. This is Donald Trump's birth chart, because we'll talk about him in a little while, in what we call sidereal astrology. Most people will find their sun signs change in Vedic astrology versus tropical. Look at Trump, if you put him up here. Look at his sun is back here in Gemini, in tropical. This is his tropical chart. See, I know this looks very complex, and that's because I'm using ancient astrology. You can see ancient astrology is far richer and much more detailed than modern astrology. And I'm not debunking modern astrologers, because there's some really intelligent and good modern astrologers. But I would also say they're missing the richness of the astronomy. See, ancient astrology was astronomy applied to the soul. Completely different. Today, everyone is their astrology. You know, most people know their sun sign. They'll say, well, I'm a Gemini, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're really a spiritual being having a physical experience. And I always tell people, you're not your astrology, you know, but you're heavily influenced by it. And I actually think we may be, our souls actually created the astrology. Here's an interesting diagram I love to show people. I would love to share this with you. This is an old model in the Kabbalistic hierarchies. And we have the same thing, by the way, similar anyways, in the Vedantic. You can see, no matter what person's spiritual beliefs are, okay, everyone believes either in God, and if they don't, they believe in some supernal being, right? So I'll just stick with the God thing, because that's what I believe. I think God exists, absolutely, and is above all creation. Beneath that, this is a world called Atzilut, which is a strange word in Hebrew, which means exceedingly high, and there's other meanings to it. But notice the hierarchies here are huge classes of angels. You have the seraphims, the cherubims, and the thrones. And it's believed your soul is created right here at the upper portions of this upper tree of life. Now, just to give you a little perspective of how simple this diagram is, they say there's 49 dimensions in this world with 49 subdimensions that are gargantuan. Then you get underneath here, you have another 49 dimensions and a 49 sub, and notice the dominance, the virtues, and the powers. There's no rotating galaxies up here. There's no amino acids. There's no molecules. There's no quantum physics and all that stuff, though quantum physics, to its credit, can certainly theorize about it. It's way down here. This is a Hebrew word known as Yetzirah, which means formation or solidification. This is where the amino acids, the molecules, the rotating galaxies, and the universe or universes are that we might call the universe. And of course, now look at, we start to see the familiar archangels, angels, intelligence, and spirits. So then, now the Western Judeo-Christian religion always talks about the fallen hierarchies or the fallen angels, the demons or spirits cast out of heaven. Of course, Lucifer, Satan, Belial, and Leviathan are the main four, but there's literally legions and legions beneath that. So And then, of course, here we are, right, on this little ball called Earth, rolling around, paying our bills, dealing with what we do, and all the stuff we do to each other. And this is the place of where I believe karma plays out. Now, here's the point. If your soul is believed to be created up here in this theological model, which I believe this model is pretty correct, and I'll you know, if you ask, I'll tell you why, but it's a detailed answer. But the point is, if your soul is created up here and we're incarnating in this, what I call soul cauldron called Earth down here, how in the hell could you be your astrology if your soul is created up here? You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. So we're far more than astrology. So everybody says, well, what the hell? Why should we study astrology? Well, because astrology really is powerful in indicating in the world of time, which is what planet Earth is. I mean, think about it. This thing's rolling around on its axis every day. The sun doesn't rise. It doesn't set. Doesn't cumulate. Doesn't, you know, nadir at midnight. It does that based on the rotation of the Earth. So a day is a cycle of the Earth. A year and a month is the moon and of course, the yearly traverse around the Earth of the sun. So it's all astronomy. It's you know, our perception of reality is absolutely shaped by the astronomy of the Earth.
That is fascinating. And it seems to be intertwined with the spirit world and, you know, the world of the supernatural. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I really do. I mean, let's face it. Every single person drawing breath is going to exit the body known as death. And, you know, every time I have a friend pass away or a relative, or we all do, you know, time kind of stops for us. We all, you know, it really hurts to lose someone. And it, I think it jolts us out of our, again, our perception of reality and makes us stop and pause and realize the value of life and how divine it is. I mean, I think in a world, and this is another thing, and you mentioned this earlier, and I didn't want to get so far off track. There's many types of astrology, though I think this was important to bring up because I really love to show people this. And you're the first one ever I've ever shown this on a podcast with. Oh, so, wow. And I love this. Yeah, well, I love to show people this because to me, this is the goods. And you can go in the Vedantic. There's actually a couple of professors did profound work in the, I think it was the University of Atlanta, where, in fact, I have the document back there in the bookcase. It's a book called The Veda and the Torah, where they actually make a really critical comparison between the Vedantic scriptures and the Torah, which for anyone in Christianity, that is the Old Testament, the five books of Moses, which is a very secret, very cryptographic document. You know, I mean, that's what I love. See, when you start getting into, this is why I really was attracted to ancient astrology. See, there's something in the Bible known as the Shem Hamaforish. The Shem Hamaforish is none other than what we know as Exodus. Okay, there's 72 angels that rule each quintessence of the zodiac. Now, you can't make this stuff up. And see, this is what I loved about ancient astrology. When I get these old rabbinical texts, Egyptian texts, and other texts, you would literally see references to not only zodiac signs and planets, but you would start getting angels, intelligences, and spirits that would rule in that. And they would act like multidimensional switches that would be acting upon the soul appropriately. And isn't that interesting? You know, the metaphor of Moses parting the Red Sea in Exodus. What does Exodus imply? Escaping from Alcatraz, right? Getting out of the perception of reality we're in. There's a lot deeper meaning. And if our fine religions were out to help us, and I do particularly blame some of the stuff that went on in Rome, because they buried a lot of this stuff. And you can get it in many of the old rabbinical texts. And most of it's just been lost. And I think a lot of it has been the spirits trying to hide this stuff. But the Shem HaMeforesh, which is, again, Exodus, is very interesting. The numerology, look at 7 and 2 is what? 9. How long is a child in a mother's womb? 9 months, right? Okay. And then 9 is also spiritual completion on the physical plane. You'll find 9 all over the place in ancient spiritual documents. In fact, anybody who's familiar with yoga and doing tantra or doing things like they call puja in Vedic astrology, they look at the moon. The moon goes around the earth how many days? 27 and a half days, right? And what's 2 and 7? 9. There's 4 divisions. This is the lunar zodiac in Vedic astrology. I always joke around with astronomers because, you know, they're so left brain scientific. I said, no matter how much you polish the lenses on your telescopes, you're never going to see this zodiac either because it's, you know, it's a spiritual construct. It doesn't exist in the sky to, you know, focus in on a telescope. But this is one of the major premises of Vedic astrology. The soul, in fact, you look at the tree of life, this is really cool. This stuff all ties in with the Vedantic as well as the Kabbalistic. And if you take the tree of life, which if I find it, darn thing, here we go. The tree of life is very interesting. Where's the last place we leave? We bake in mom's womb for approximately 9 months, right? And what happens? We end up on the four elements between her feet, earth, air, fire, and water. See? So, and science always balks at that too. They go, well, come on, you know, reality. We have the atomic tables and the table of the elements and all this, you know, and I'm like, yeah, but isn't that really, couldn't you refer to gases as air and solids as earth? And, you know, you see, so it's still, no matter how they balk at it, earth, air, fire, and water, or the four major archangels, would rule all the complexities of the earth. Quantum physicists say the same thing. They're saying, you know, something exceedingly intelligent is bolting all this together. And, you know, like there's experiments, I'm sure you've heard of them, the slit experiments way back, what was it, the 1700s and 49. And there was another one in 1702, I think it was. Was it? Remember that thing on consciousness? I got a plate here somewhere. If it isn't on this presentation, it's another one. Yeah, right here, double slit experiment, 1703. See, where Jung had actually proved that observation changes matter atomically. You can't make this stuff up. So, and again, there was another plate I was just showing here. This is the Kalisco effect known by the Guaclin effect, the Guaclin experiments, where they had, which is referred to as the Kalisco effect, which is essentially proving that astrological configurations, not gravity, actually had effects on different metallic substances and metallic salts. And this is something I use all the time. Many years ago, undertaken gemstone therapy. That's one of the wonderful things about Vedic astrology. Unlike your birthstone, many people have heard of their birthstones, but I actually prescribe specific stones based on your birth chart in Vedic astrology. And diamonds aren't for everybody, though most people can wear diamonds because it rules Venus. That's why they stole that. But there are certain stones you absolutely do not want to wear, and there's other ones you do. There are some individuals who can pretty much wear anything. It's not, you know, always the case, but interesting stuff. And this all relates to the energy that science just can't seem to grab. You know, the science basically looks at, you know, four major elements. They look at, you know, atomic energy, hard and soft. They look at gravity and electromagnetism. And once you get past those four general major subjects, it's like, sorry, we can't prove it. So it can't be true.
Hey, you know, now, when you say angels and demons, do you believe that these are actual spiritual conscious entities that can actually interact with humans? Because it seems, you know, the ancients used to commune with the spirit world regularly, and it's something that we've lost along the way. I mean, there's still some that practice this, but, you know, do you believe these entities are actual conscious entities that can communicate with us?
I do. I absolutely do. There's a lot. That's, again, I love the whole subject of parapsychology. There are a lot of really knowledgeable people in hypnotherapy, parapsychology, clearing. Yeah, I do. And I think angels are about us constantly, even though some might balk at that. But I absolutely do. In fact, do you know that you can actually get the name of your guardian angel from the birth chart? And that's interesting. And remember that model I showed you before. They say there's a guardian angel, a very high one from the Order of the Thrones, that brings us down into quote-unquote creations. And I don't believe Earth is the only place. It's the only place we can consciously be aware of. And in fact, they say that when that angel brings us down in here, there's another angel. Just FYI, it's believed our solar system and the galaxy, maybe the Milky Way, where we are, is way down here. It's like this little corner of the bottom here, just to give you a perspective of how vast this is. A very simplistic diagram, but yet nonetheless, it's, you know, good to demonstrate it. So the point is, they say that this is just chock full of disincarnate souls at different levels of purification and rectification. And that's, again, some of the mysteries to these diagrams of the five levels of the soul. And again, the same thing in the Upanishads, where it's believed we are here purifying and rectifying the soul. In fact, I believe one of the possibilities that we have maybe become more shut down. They say as our solar system progresses through the precession of the equinoxes, there are certain fixed star groups. Some people call it the dark rift. And then there's other things that our solar system is moving through. And by the way, NASA has actually corroborated this. They say our solar system may be doing just short of a half of a billion miles an hour. They say it's somewhere around 483 to 485,000 miles an hour. I've never stuck my finger out the window to check, but it's pretty damn fast. And let's do some math here. The Earth is believed to be doing 60-something thousand, I think it's 67,000 miles an hour around the sun. All the other planets are doing their respective speeds. The moon's doing about Mach 2.5 around the Earth. So these are vast distances, obviously. And then we're doing almost a half of a billion miles an hour. Our sun is so fast so that they say the solar system is spiraling behind it. And there's a gentleman who actually had some modeled pictures of that. But here's where I'm going with all this is that I believe as we process through the equinoxes, ages of consciousness or unconsciousness may happen. And I think there's many theories. You may have heard of the yugas. These are ages, of course, proposed by the Vedantic literature. Some say we're in Kali Yuga, but in an age of moving fairly soon into an age of enlightenment still within the Kali. Now, there's other people, they say we're in Tetra Yuga and all this. And that's the debate. I'm not sitting here claiming I know, but I believe that this last couple of centuries for certainly the last couple thousand years has been an age of primarily war and darkness with a lot of enlightenment in it. And I mean, look at the wars we've had just last century. Look at the stuff going on right now. So it's clearly a place where it's all going on this planet for sure. And I believe there are many people who do communicate with angels and spirits. And I think some of that's dangerous. And I think, and again, I'm not here to judge anyone, but I do believe angels, one of the best texts to prove this, not that it'll give you scientific proof, but is a book called the Sefer Yetzirah. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. I'm sorry, not that book. It's the Sefer Raziel. The Sefer Raziel is the archangel Raziel was believed to come down when humans first fell out of the Garden of Eden and gave a text called, Sefer means book and Raziel means archangel Raziel. And this book will blow your hair back because it has all these legions of angels. This is exactly what we see in the Egyptian lore where at sunrise, the angels will change shift. Many of the spiritual people in Vedantic, they do much breathing techniques and prayers at sunrise. Many different religions do this. At noon, the angels change shifts, sunset, midnight, and we can feel it. Even if we're in our metal coffins going down the highway, we're still affected very much by the earth, and we feel the energies really shift. And the same thing with the lunar ingresses into all the signs. I mean, it's a text, the Sefer Raziel, that is just nothing but about angels all working the mechanics on much higher dimensions of the earth. And again, you can't make this stuff up. You know, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Now, I'd like to know how the ancients knew about our solar system, the positions of the planets, the actual planets, where they were, without access to telescopes and advanced equipment. How did they know this?
Exactly. And well, that's what I was saying earlier. The rabbinical texts they're bereft with all kinds of references of path working, talking to angels visiting them. I mean, look, it's the same thing. You know, we had, the five books of Moses, God visits him through a burning bush and communicates. Same thing in India. The rishi is synonymous with seer. They literally were seeing. They were having commune with angels. I believe everyone can do that. In fact, one of my favorite texts that was written not that long ago, it was in the 14th century, was by a man named Rabbi Maharil. Now, some folks will know him as the Abraham. He existed. He altered history throughout the Middle Ages, but he penned a book known by many as The Sacred Magic of Abramel and the Mage. Have you ever heard of that book?
Yes.
Yeah, it's an amazing text. There's two versions. One is the version put out by Mathers, who was one of the founding members of the Secret Order of the Golden Dawn. That text is not as good as the later. I think it's Goth had done it. And that's a really solid text where he had actually translated out of the Hebrew and the German. And this book basically says any human being, man, woman, child, doesn't matter what religious creed you are, can have their guardian angel come to them if they purify and rectify the soul. And this is the same thread we get. Look at the Tibetan lamas. They make them go up in the hills. They have certain people going out in the wilderness. Have you ever heard of Anastasia in Russia, the ringing cedars of Russia?
Yes, I've heard of it. I haven't done much research on it, though.
Amazing. Same MO. See, these are people who are not sullied, if you will, with modern Western society. And I'm not saying modern Western society is bad. What I am saying is that we get so rooted in our reality, we become, in technologies, we become really removed from the spiritual beings we truly are. And that's a very interesting topic, because there's an ancient legend in a book called the Sefer Haggadah. Haggadah means legend. It's a wonderful book. It's called the Book of Legends. And essentially they say, the guardian angel ties the soul to the embryo at conception, not at birth. And the Egyptians used to look at conception birth charts, not just birth charts, but conception charts. They would mathematically calculate them. And they say the 9 months that you're in the mother's womb, you're in converse, allegedly, with this angel. And I believe there's some truth to that. And I believe there's absolute truth to it. And what happens is, when you exit the womb, known as birth, in a delivery room, it's not exiting the womb that matters, it's first breath. Most children cry. And first breath, they say, is the rosh, or the spirit, that is tied to the nefesh of the body. See, that's interesting, because rosh, if you anybody can look this up on the internet, if you just Google rosh, you'll see rosh means, one of the meanings is spirit. And you know, this is the interesting thing, you know, like in AI is becoming a big issue right now. We're hearing all about these torsional waves and new computers and magnetics that are creating consciousness in computers, but they're never going to create what you have or I have or anyone else has. We're far more than that. You know, that's an emulation of consciousness in a field of generation, maybe around that lower, you know, intelligence, but we are so much higher than that. This is why, you know, when people pass away, we often hear reports of, oh, you know, I heard something move, or I had premonitions, or strange stuff happened. That's because the etheric double is often still around. In fact, I've noticed in clearing people in houses that oftentimes the disincarnate, the person who's passed away, doesn't even know they're dead. And there's some really compelling documentation in many areas of psychiatry and psychology that absolutely proves that. So, in my opinion. And so this isn't just a bunch of diagrams. It's a way of talking about it. But astrology, I think, is the unfoldment in the world of time, which of course is our reality here on the earth, that really greatly influences us. There's an old saying, and you know, this was of course a hand-me-down from the ancient Hebrew Bible, saying Israel is above the stars. And I believe Israel is all of us. It's humanity. It's just humans. And we are above the stars, but I think we're heavily influenced by them. And there's an interactive consciousness that's very strong with them. That's a lot different than, oh, geez, you're a Pisces or an Aries, you see.
Right, yeah. And man, this stuff is so fascinating. Time is moving by so fast, and I got so much more to talk about. But yeah. We're going to have to switch gears, because I want to get into some of the stuff that's happening now. Had a chance. Well, I know you have. So I'd like to talk about Trump. I'd like to talk about your thoughts on the 2020 election. Let's start there.
Okay. Well, okay. Trump is an interesting phenomena. You know, I mean, I don't think there's ever been a president who's created as much dissension as this one. There's people that absolutely love him, and there's people that absolutely despise him. He, and his chart, his Vedic chart, absolutely defines it. I mean, if we went into the mechanics of Trump's chart, I mean, when I saw his chart for the first time, I was just like, oh my God, this is this guy, totally. He's a very powerful individual, love him or hate him. And I'm not here to promote him or demote him. I'm just here to read the chart. This is a really strong chart. And I would also say the reason I knew he was going to win in 2016, and I literally almost got, I was on a radio show in 2016, I think in January, way before the Republican primaries and Democratic primaries had actually, you know, completed, where it was down to two people, Hillary and Trump. I said, Trump's going to win this election. And everybody was like, you're out of your mind. There's no way this idiot's going to, you know, win the election. I said, he's got it. And why did I say that? Well, there's something, and it's not shown in this chart, but the Egyptians, we can certainly thank for this. They had something called primary directions. In fact, here, I'll show it to you. Primary directions are literally every person that's born, and this is something I always do in readings with people. You can see this here. Today, modern astrologers call them solar arcs. You can see where I'm highlighting right here. A solar arc direction is what we call a primary direction. So watch when I click this, this outer wheel is Trump's, well, will be his solar arcs when I turn it on. And this is his birth chart in tropical astrology. So you'll notice something. His son, he was born right up here on the cusp of the 11th house. So this is the house of career. And it's, of course, the time he won, I think he was 69 going on 70. He was 70. He had just turned 70. His primary directed son had just crossed the ascendant. Now, that'll never happen again in his life. And it's never happened before, never happened again. And that's why I knew he'd win. Hillary, not a chance. She had primary directed son conjuncting her Saturn, but her Saturn was way up here. So not a chance. I think it was Saturn conjuncting her sun. And I just looked at all the other charts and I said, not a chance. Trump's got it, but just based on the cycles in his chart. Trump actually has the chart of an emperor. Why? And talk about guardian angels. See, I referred to before the Exodus references of the Shem and Mephoresh in the Bible, but there's many, many, many more secrets. There's angels that rule every single degree of the zodiac, both sidereally, meaning in the sidereal zodiac, in the precession of the equinoxes, and in the tropical zodiac. It's exceedingly complex. And a lot of mystical documents have references to these. They're obscure, but they're there. And that's a great fascination of mine. Anyways, one of the codexes that I have actually shows Trump was born, and I rectified his birth time to 10/53/21. By the way, Trump's birth chart is actually at 10/54, published in the birth certificate in Queens Village, New York, in 1946, June 14th. So I rolled it back because I can measure energy sometimes really accurately if I get a good read, and I can actually find when first breath was. And I believe it was about, you know, 39 seconds approximately before the 10/54. You can see it's 10/53/21. So that puts Trump in the seventh degree of sidereal Leo rising. So that ASC right there means where the eastern horizon was on the rotation of the earth at the longitude and latitude of where he was born. That's how astrology works. So that degree, and I'll spare you the book, but that degree actually is it's a degree that says it is a king with a crown sitting on a golden throne. Now, does that fit Trump? Love him or hate him? I mean, look at Trump Towers. Look at everything around this guy. It's opulence. It's gold. It's lavish. It's just the way he is. It's the way the guy is. And, you know, like he said, when he moved into the White House, he said it was a step down from Trump Towers. I mean, you see the interviews in Trump Towers. It's nothing but gold lace. In fact, Trump Towers, I think his home is modeled after Versailles. You know, and I went to Versailles, and it was amazing. I mean, just, you know, opulent. So that you see how accurate Vedic astrology is. Plus, with Trump being Leo rising, notice if anyone knows astrology, here, let me put a little circle here. This sign right here is called Leo. I just circled it in green, right? And what rules Leo, if anybody knows anything about astrology, the sun. And where is Trump's sun? In the 10th house. See, in Vedic astrology, this is sunrise, this is noon, this is sunset, this is midnight. See the cross that I'm doing? See? And here, I'll do it this way. And this is the cross this way. I don't know if that showed up on the screen, but the trines are 1, 5, and 9. See, they're 120 degrees from one another. In Vedic astrology, this is the secret codes of the soul, is the moment in time you're born, the eastern horizon establishes what we call the angles in the birth chart and the trines and the placements of the planets. It's like tic-tac-toe. You have to look at what we call the yogas. And it's not simple to do, but once you learn the language, it's like looking at almost a computer code of the soul. So Trump, right off the bat, has, you know, a king on a golden throne with a crown on it. And of course, the Lord of the Ascendant is the sun. Where in the 10th house? That's the chart of an emperor right there. I mean, like this guy or hate him, that's what his chart is. You know, and they can throw tomatoes at him all they want. He is the president. And they've been trying to remove him. They'll try and impeach him. I don't think they're going to get anywhere.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I've always just had the personal belief that a president's a puppet. Basically, there's somebody always behind the scenes pulling the strings. That's just my personal belief. But Trump has done some things that has surprised me. I do have somewhat of hope with him. And that's why I'm kind of interested in what's going to happen with the 2020
election. You get hate mail now.
Right. Because, you know, I don't trust any of those puppets that they put up there. And Trump, you know, he has given me a glimmer of hope, although it's not much, but it's something, you know. What do you see happening?
Well, a lot, an awful lot. And just if you don't mind, I digress for a second. I absolutely agree with you. You know, a guy that I used to know, in fact, all my filing cabinets behind me in the corner, a guy you may know of, gave them to me. It was George Carlin. And I always loved George. George said to me in 1994, he says, Jeff, he says, you want any filing cabinets? And I said, yeah. And he says, good, get them out of here because I'm getting new ones, right? So I never thought anything until he died that, wow, I got a little piece of George Carlin history here. And why I brought that up is because it relates to what you just said. And that is, George left us with a wonderful piece of work. It was called The American Dream. Remember that on the HBO special? If anybody doesn't know it, watch it. It's so right on. It's absolutely what you just said. Forget about the politicians. You have owners. They own this place. They print the money and they own this place. Now, I'm not saying the politics and the governors and all this don't have influence. They certainly do. But if you watch what's going on behind the scenes, if Trump wasn't in the fold, I don't think he'd be drawing breath. Trump, for what it's worth, if you look at his birth chart, a lot of people think he's crazy. I've heard all kinds of things. The Vedic astrology suggests otherwise. Why? Trump is actually very smart. Belligerent a bit, yes. He may be a bit, you know, over the edge on his deliveries, but smart he is. And the reason why, this is Mercury. And notice Mercury, the glyph is the crescent of the moon over the sun, over the cross. By the way, all the glyphs of the planets are combinations of the sun, the moon, and the cross. Isn't that interesting? See, Saturn is the cross over the crescent of the moon. So with Trump is so intense because he has what we call a Raj Yoga Mars. Now, that's a strange term in Vedic astrology. Raj Yoga actually means kingly union. See, if you look at sunrise, noon, sunset, midnight, for anyone who knows the rulerships, Trump has, here, let me just put something up here. I'll undo these here. There we go. Trump has Mars ruling his fourth house. Why? Because that's Scorpio on the Lord of the Fourth. See, that's first, fourth, seventh, and tenth. And he's got Mars ruling his ninth house. See, so that's an angle and a trine. And modern astrologers have to realize Vedic astrology doesn't use Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto, and neither does ancient astrology in the tropical. I personally think Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto have a huge effect, but they don't rule anything. See, that's where the zodiac got broken. All this stuff in the 1800s and 1900s, all we know is Pluto rules Scorpio, and they think Aquarius rules Uranus, and Pisces rules Neptune. But you can't do that. So Trump's Mars is exceedingly powerful. This guy loves a fight. He's absolutely loves abrasion. It's, you know, but yet he's cordial. And again, I'm not defending this man or trying to why he's so much about military and honor is because of these two yogas. He has the sun in the 10th aspected by Jupiter. That's another exceedingly powerful Raj yoga. See, Sag rules the fifth house, which rules Jupiter. And Jupiter puts its ninth house trine onto the sun. That's why this guy's president. And that's why he's not going to be easy to knock off the horse. He won't, because his Mars is so strong. I think he's going to win the 2020 election. If they don't kill him first, and I don't think they will. I've heard they've tried several times. But Trump is backed by some very powerful people. Many people have postulated on the internet. I've heard the same thing through a couple of clients who... I think he's backed by some very powerful people, but he's also made some powerful enemies. But I think he leans towards getting in. And here's why. I'll show you. This is the first time. I was actually going to do a video on this on YouTube, but I'll do it on your show. So you get to be the first one. This, I'm going to turn on something here called secondary progressions. Now, secondary progressions is what this outer wheel will be here any second. Notice something is about to happen here with Trump. By the way, this moon right here, the secondary progress moon, takes 27 and a half approximate years to go around the chart. So the next time Trump goes to this barbecue, he's going to be 100 years old. So this is not going to happen in his productive years. So Trump, during his whole presidency, has had the progress moon in the 12th house. Watch, if I jump back 2 years, see, look at this. Right when he got elected, at the end of 2016, or took office, which would have been actually the beginning of 2017, which you can see right there, January, the progress moon was heading into his 12th house. See, the moon moves counterclockwise this way around. So what's interesting is he spent his whole presidency so far with a very, how shall I say it, introverted, not easy position of the progress moon. And what's happened, we've had the Mueller report, you know, it's been monkey pile on this guy, love him or hate him, they've been after him. Now, here's what's about to happen. And this is very interesting stuff. And this is, again, some things that attracted me to ancient astrology. Secondary progressions date way back. I mean, these are mathematical progressions. And Trump literally just had the progressed moon cross his ascendant. First time in 27 something years. Guess what he just did? He just announced his new run. In fact, he announced it within a day or two of it. Now, notice something else. Trump's progressed moon is going to conjunct what we call the progressed sun. Now, that's a really big deal. That's called a new progressed moon. By the way, everyone will have these in their lives at least 2 to 3 times in a lifetime. First time, you're probably going to be about 27, 28 years old, but maybe not. See, it's different for everybody. It depends on, yeah, I got to be careful saying that, because it depends where you were born. See, Trump was actually born with his, right at a full moon. That's another issue. We could talk about Trump all night here. But I'll be putting out a YouTube video in real detail about this soon. But Trump was born not only during a full moon, which is why he has so much, he takes all the oxygen out of the room, but he was also born near an eclipse. See, and that's why this guy, see, he's like a freight train. Love him or hate him. You notice he either stirs fervor towards hatred or he stirs fervor that everybody loves him. And I mean, they weren't exaggerating. I heard there was close to 100,000 people at that rally down there and it fit 20 or 21. So, you know, no matter how you slice this cake, this guy still, he's a dynamo. He takes all the oxygen out of the political landscape wherever he goes, either for good or for ill. And this is what his chart shows. Well, Donald Trump has the progressed moon about to hit his sun. When? I'll tell you when. So I think September 6th. In fact, you guys could see the dates up here where I'm highlighting. See that up there at the far right? Yeah. So if I go forward in monthly increments, this is the beauty of computer programs, you'll actually see, I think it's right around September 6th, give or take a couple of days. In fact, you'll notice what I'm doing is I'm lining the degrees and minutes of his progressed sun up with this progressed moon. So I'm going to go backwards until they're equal right there. Yes, yeah, September 16th, not the 6th. So what does this mean in plain English? I think, and I got to tell you, I omitted this earlier, but Trump had his progressed moon conjunct Mars the day the Mueller report came out. The day. Now, they didn't prosecute him. And they can say whatever they want. They can go for collusion. They go for delusion, whatever they want. They didn't get him. Okay. The bottom line, he's still president. And they can throw as many darts at the wall as they want and knives. But the bottom line is this guy still is president. And I think we're going to see some real heads roll. This whole thing with Q seems to be more real than not. And there's a lot of mystery surrounding that. I personally think hell's going to come loose when this progressed moon goes across to his sun. And I would be really surprised if there isn't some very substantial stuff that's going on legally with this FISA report and many of the other things that had gone on behind the scenes that were illegal, because the symbolism shows it. This will be the first time during Trump's presidency he's ever had the secondary progressed moon out in past its sun. By the way, that means new seeds are planted. And this is one of the things I look for in readings when I do readings for people is where is that moon, that progressed moon? Because the first quarter is achievement and new beginnings. The second quarter is to a full moon, a life peak. And the third quarter is where you kind of encapsulate what you've done. And then the fourth quarter is, which is each, by the way, it's about 7 years approximately. See? So very, very interesting.
Yes, it is very interesting.
Well, that's what I mean. Astrology is astronomy. It really is. It's not a bunch of, you know, crystal balls and, you know, incense, even though that stuff's fine. But, you know, for anybody who wants to use it. But it's math. It's that's what attracted me to it. It's really an astronomical science. And these tools, when my mother and I did astrology back in the 70s, I mean, we were doing this. We were drawing charts, getting books and ephemerises and coloring things in. In fact, when I first started Vedic astrology, a couple of the teachers that I first started with, we were doing charts by hand. We'd sit there and draw them out, color it all in. I'll never forget, one of my teachers says, Jeff, you must always cast chart by hand. I said, okay. And then I came in the late 90s with the first iteration of this particular program. And he goes, oh my God. He goes, that's so fast. He says, I want a copy. I said, no, grasshopper, you must always cast chart by hand. He goes, no, I want a copy. I says, yes, you do. Because, you know, the only danger with computers is there is the danger that you become dependent on a tool that isn't set up right. And that is where I do agree, learning astrology the proper way and then going to a computer program, you'll at least know when the computer's not right. Because I often see the computers mess up and I catch it right away. So, because it's just a machine, you know.
So. Right. And Jeff, we live in fascinating times. We live in amazing times and it can be scary at times. And one of the things that I want to close out talking about is the earth changes that we're experiencing right now.
Awesome.
I believe we're going through, whether it's a cycle or an area of space we're going through or the grand solar minimum or whatever it is. I believe it's cosmic in nature, what we're experiencing. So what are your thoughts about what's going on? Because I cover this in my news reports. Our planet is changing. There are earthquakes popping off like crazy right now, volcanoes, climate chaos. What are your thoughts?
Great thing. Well, you mentioned a great thing. That was the grand solar minimum is clearly one element. You can see what I just turned on here, by the way, is this is literally where I'm at. Of course, I'm in West Hills, California right now. But I could tell you, no matter where we are in the globe, this is the Earth in the middle, and this is the tropical zodiac around us. And the sidereal would be similar, it's just different degrees. So what's going on right now? Notice you can see this is Saturn right here where I'm circling and Pluto. Now, and notice Saturn and Pluto are right next to this little upside down horseshoe. This is known as the south node of the moon. That's where eclipses happen. And we have a very powerful eclipse about to happen here on the 2nd of July, right around the corner, just next week. So what's going on, and I believe why the weather is so cuckoo nuts right now, is not only do we have the grand solar minimum, and I think we're also moving through some places in the galactic picture, if you will, that are very, very powerful. But we also have Saturn and Pluto conjuncting. Now, this is a very interesting conjunction, because even though I practice Vedic astrology, I also love ancient tropical astrology. And notice this tropical zodiac here, Saturn and Pluto are going to conjoin when? January 12th of 2020, coming right up. You see the degrees and minutes are getting close. And both are retrograde right now. That's what the little RX there means. So what's interesting about this is Saturn and Pluto always raise havoc. The last time they were in Capricorn was a long, long time ago. And especially at the South Node, empires fall on these. And isn't this interesting? Not only do we have crazy weather, I mean, the Mississippi, my wife is from New Orleans, the Mississippi right now is at unbelievable record levels. They're having so much problems navigating. It could cost untold fortunes if there's accidents on that right now. The ship navigators are being so careful. I was just reading about that today. And the farmers can't plant food. We've got off the charts weather all over the place. We got the Pacific Rim lighting up, Krakatoa, all these volcanoes. I'm very concerned this fall. Watch, let me just go forward in monthly increments. November and December particularly have some alignments. Look at that. This is November and December. You can actually see here on the chart. You've got Pluto, Saturn, Mercury, Venus, all these guys lining up, and Mars too, all on this side of the zodiac from the Earth. That's a tremendous pull on the Earth. We could see some real Earth changes in terms of earthquakes. And another thing I haven't mentioned, because we're covering a lot of ground here quickly, is every time Saturn and Pluto joins, there's always calamity, either through weather. There's oftentimes some real serious problems in the world. Just to give you an example, in 1914, these two joined up. What happened? World War I. On the square, we had the crash of the stock market in 29, historical, right? Secondly, in fact, everyone knows right here, and right around that same time, that's when, you know, Woodrow Wilson signed the country over to the bankers, right? So you see the stuff that happens, unprecedented. So then World War II broke out in the opposition and was finished up by the next conjunction. By the way, 9/11 happened on the Saturn-Pluto opposition in 2001. Very close to the eclipse energy that we've got coming up here on the 2nd. Not that I'm saying 9/11 is going to happen, but I'm saying, or, you know, that kind of an event. But we're in the throes right now of some very dangerous stuff, not only from a geopolitical standpoint, but also from a weather standpoint, because these things do that, meaning Saturn and Pluto. There's even a bigger cycle I'll talk about in a minute. But just before I do that, the Saturn-Pluto opposition brought us 9/11. In 2008, Saturn and Pluto were in square, and 9, that's when the banks crashed. The housing market went in the sewer. And of course, we were printing untold, you know, amounts of money. And what are we talking about again? Oh, quantitative easing again. Lowering the interest rates, printing more money, see? So these things, whether we believe it or not, have a gargantuan impact on the world. And like I said, empires fall. In fact, the Roman Empire actually kind of really officially fell in the 5th, I think it was the 5th through 6th century, just really fell apart. Even though it was failing much before that, it really was kind of the nail in the coffin when these two joined back then. So it's a very historical comparisons. The other one that I want to mention is, notice this is Jupiter, the blue planet I'm circling. So Jupiter and Saturn join up about every 20 years. So this is not an unusual occurrence. What is an unusual occurrence is that there's secrets to this that go all the way back to the flood of Noah. And this is some of the ancient astrology that really was fascinating. Even though some of the translators are in dispute as to the exact details, the general details are right on. And that is, every time about 1,000 years, Saturn and Jupiter join in the first degrees of Aries, or somewhere in Aries. Then about every 240 years, see, if you look at the signs, they're fire, earth, air, and water. And it repeats, fire, earth, air, and water, fire, earth, air, and water. So these elements are built into the angelic construct of the entire solar system and the universe. So what's interesting, and just because science can't measure it doesn't mean it isn't there. So what's interesting is Saturn and Jupiter are going to join in an air sign when the winter solstice of 2020. I believe an air sign is, see, if you even look at the glyphs of these signs, there's really big secrets. That means the four modalities of transportation and technology is one way to look at that. So, and I think we may see people becoming more psychic over the next 200 years for sure. I think consciousness is going to expand, but I also think I think it's going to get like the Jetsons. I really
That's
do.
What I was going to ask you. If you see us getting past all this turmoil and, you know, our consciousness evolving and going into a better, you know, place.
I do. I think it's going to get ugly here for the next year and a half. I really do. And I hope I'm wrong. I'm not a fear porn promoter. A lot of people love promoting fear porn, selling flashlights and all that. And that's great. Flashlights are handy. But, and it's good to have food. And, you know, I'm not saying they're wrong. It's good to be prepared. But I do say every time historically I've gone back and looked at the astronomy or astrology, if you want to call it that, when these two guys either conjuncted, squared, opposed, always was trouble. Always trouble. War, earth changes, erratic weather. This one is, I think, more pronounced because we have, you know, like look at the grand solar minimum. That is huge. I mean, and that's science. I mean, there's no refuting that. It's absolutely so. I mean, the magnetics are racing all over the globe right now. I mean, they're chasing it. They've had to reorientate GPS navigation, you know, with the planes with this. So it's there's a lot going on. And of course, they don't want to create panic. You know, we're the teleprompter readers, known as the news, like George Carlin said, it's a big club, the one that they're beating us over the head with every day, telling us what to believe. Remember that? You got to watch The American Dream. It's one of my favorites. Anyways, I think this Saturn-Jupiter conjunction is extremely pronounced because it happens on the winter solstice of 2020, meaning January 21st of 2020. And not that that's day itself is going to alter the world or lightning bolts from the sky are going to come down from heaven. I believe that it's a marker point where we're going to start to see the change moving forward. We may see a lot of suppressed technologies now become commercially feasible. I think we're going to see explosions in genetics and new thinking that's going to start to emerge in the next couple of decades. That's going to blow our minds. And we're already seeing it. Look at this. You've got cars that drive themselves. You've got drones delivering things. It's just right on the edge of reality, and it's poised to happen. And I believe the astronomy or astrology, if you will, is going to usher that in. I think we're right around the corner from it.
There's also some kind of encouraging things happening with the disclosure movement. I don't know if it's the source is going to be reliable. I don't know if it's disinformation, but I do see that inevitable disclosure happening.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, and let me show you why. Now let's go back to Trump's chart. Okay. Again, love him or hate him, he is the president, and I think he's going to be again. That's what the charts indicate. Watch this. Going back to the primary directions I was talking about earlier, which modern astrologers call solar arcs, and I'm not going to get into the details. There's many ways to do these. Watch something we're about to see here. Trump gets back in. Notice this is Uranus, the two crescents of the moon bent outwards with the sun. I'm sorry, with the cross in the middle underneath the sun. So there's a lot of mystical secrets to these glyphs. Trump won the presidency right as the sun, for the first time in his life, crossed the ascendant. Now, if you do the math here, exactly in about, and give or take, this is approximately the next 6 months, Uranus is going to cross Trump's ascendant. Now, you might say, okay, great, what does that mean? Well, I can tell you that is very fitting when you talk about disclosure, unusual, out of the blue stuff happening that's unprecedented. And he's going to have to contend with that. And I personally think that this is about to happen, and some very unusual things are going to happen I really do. And I also hope that nothing breaks out in the Middle East. I've been saying for a long time, I was very concerned with the whole issues with Israel, Iran, Syria, Jordan. It's a hot box over there, always has been, and could continue to be. Let's hope it doesn't happen, but it could. And I think this Uranus crossing Trump's ascendant, in fact, watch, if you just look at this, so you're giving away all my secrets here, buddy. I was going to do a YouTube video on this, but that's all right. You deserve it. All right. So you can be the first one to show this, because this is, I don't think any other astrologer's shown this stuff, and they ought to, because this is pretty standard stuff if you're doing ancient astrology. So notice Uranus crosses his ascendant about the summer of, or fall, if you will, of 2021. See where I'm getting that? And I'm being topical here. So between now and then, expect the unexpected. Stuff out of the blue is going to happen, and I would expect it in many areas. You know, Trump is 73 years old. A lot of people say, well, how does this guy have so much energy? Well, let me tell you what, if you had a Rajyoga Mars like that in the ascendant, that's one of the strongest Mars I've seen. Exceedingly strong. This guy's got a lot of punch. And see, another thing too, notice Mars aspects his seventh house of marriage. Every person I've ever read for who has Mars aspect in the seventh house of marriage, they usually have a few marriages. And he has. I think, what is it, number four? Three or four. So, and notice the Lord of his seventh, meaning Aquarius rules Saturn, is in the 12th house. Isn't that interesting? But his children work with him. Why? The Lord of the fifth, which is children, is in the second house, aspecting his Lord of the ascendant in the house of career. And they do. He's got in-laws, you know, like Jared and, of course, Donald and Ivanka, all working with him in some capacity. And it's really in the chart. It really, really is. So, and Trump, I think we may see stuff that we've never seen before. We've already seen stuff we've never seen before with this guy in office. I mean, in my lifetime, I don't want to date myself here, but I was very little when Kennedy was killed, and I remember that. I remember being on the lawn. My dad and my uncle were cleaning the leaves out of the gutters, and we had a little AM radio. John F. Kennedy was just killed. I went, oh, my God. You know, I was just a little guy. But and I think we're going to see some pretty bizarre stuff here with, if Trump continues to be president, which I think he's going to, if they try and impeach him, which I don't think they're going to do. And if they do, I don't think they're going to get anywhere. I don't think they will. I think it's going to go the other way around. I think this powder keg is going to blow up in their faces. That's what I think.
Yeah, that would be good to see.
Like punching jello. The harder you punch him, the harder back it pops at you. It's just, it's the way his chart is.
Right. And Jeff, I want to thank you so much. That was absolutely fascinating information. There's so much more we could have talked about, so I'm definitely going to have you back on again soon.
Yeah, well, it was enjoyable. Yeah, it's a lot to cover, you know, and I mean, astrology's heady stuff, but I think what is valuable is seeing some of these diagrams. You know, even for people who don't know astrology, you can get the idea. It's not that complex. You know, this is sunrise, that's noon, this is sunset, and this is midnight. And yes, it is complex, but the gist of it, it really helps with the visual. The retention's much higher.
Definitely. And before you go, just give everyone your website and anything else you'd like to plug before you head out.
Yeah, sure. And by the way, in readings, I'm doing this now where I'm actually making movies for clients and sending them to them. And, you know, the other thing we haven't mentioned is location astrology, which is absolutely fascinating. And by the way, look at Trump. Here. This is location astrology. Everybody has this. There's certain places that are wonderful for you to live and certain places that aren't. And you have transits and progressions. Look at Trump has Mars on the ascendant running where? Right through Washington, D.C. Also known as the District of Criminals. So that's what D.C. stands for. But
yeah.
Anyways, so yeah, it's fascinating. But my website is jeff@jeffharman.com, and that's H-A-R-M-A-N.com, jeff@jeffharman.com, or just jeffharman.com, and then you can get to me that way. And yeah, well, we had fun. It's a lot of ground to cover in an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why I'm going to have you back on soon. We'll set something up.
Okay.
All right. Well, you have an excellent night.
You as well. Thank you.